Hello, it is May 15th, 2014. This is episode 418 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, Wayman Tisdale, who died May 15th, 2009. Tisdale never liked basketball as a child and was far more interested in playing the bass in his father's church. He grew 24 inches in 1.5 years in junior high and ended up becoming 6'9" and the most decorated college basketball player in the country at Oklahoma. He is one of only three men to ever become a three-time All-American. Patrick Ewing and Doug McDermott are the other two. He also won a gold medal in the 1984 Olympics, and he played 12 years in the NBA and retired at the age of 33 to focus on his music. As it turned out, he was a terrific musician, perhaps the greatest athlete musician in sports history. He put out 8 different albums of jazz guitar, including 3 that reached number 1 on Billboard's contemporary jazz charts. His last album, Rebound, concerned his battle with bone cancer, which caused him to have his right leg amputated. He ended up dying of the cancer in his hometown of Tulsa. He was 44 years old. Here in Athens, though, it is merely Thursday. I'm Will Leach. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. I've tried to get in the hockey playoffs this year. I'm a Blues fan, ostensibly. But also, living in New York for as long as I did, and really enjoyed every time I got to go to a Rangers game. The Rangers have been a delight for their fans, certainly in the postseason. Two, I would consider them friends of mine. Yeah, good friends, even. I know they're good friends of mine. Are Joe D'Alessio, who writes about hockey for Sports on Earth, and today's guest, Katie Baker, who is a staff writer for Grantland. Those are the two biggest Ranger fans I know, along with maybe Barry Pachevsky at Deadspin, but he's not so much a podcast guy. Regardless of the Rangers or anything else, I can't believe I get to talk to Katie Baker today. She is the best, so we're going to talk to Katie. First off, Ms. Baker, may I say that I am delighted to have you on, and thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Will.
That's actually the whole interview. That's all that I have.
Great, I aced it.
Yeah, I know, well done. I don't know how this works over there. I don't know if now you have to... If I'm outing you, I apologize. You can admit you're a Rangers fan even though you're a National Hockey Writer, right? You don't have to hide that.
I feel like one of the benefits in your 401k package of working for Grantland is you're allowed to be a sports fan. It's like what the site was built on. But I mean, I was nervous it was going to be Rangers Bruins because I feel Bruins fans are very highly attuned to any sort of bias in anyone. And I just wasn't looking forward to having, everything analyzed. Maybe not in the way it was intended. So
are Montreal fans?
Canadiens fans are, I think they're just a little happy to be there and giddy. Oh. And, obviously they're smart fans too, but I don't quite fear them the way I do Bruins fans.
Well, it's funny. I had this a little bit during the World Series last year because, of course, I actually am a fan of the St. Louis Cardinals as a baseball team.
Oh, yeah. I never knew that about you.
I know. I try to keep it quiet. And yeah. I'm not some Johnny come lately, old West rules. Oh, I can just root for teams and write about them like the whippersnappers you guys have over at Grantland. I'm a serious journalist. So, but I'm curious. I had a really hard time, to be honest, in the World Series, particularly being there. And I sat with my dad for one of the games, but I sat in the press box for the other games. And it was, I was able to I'm not a savage. I was able to go without cheering, but it was miserable because yeah. I really wanted to. And I felt I was doing a lot of twitching and I'm curious, are you nervous about that? Are you going to go to, I'm assuming, will you go to the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, so I'm planning to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. I do every year, right. I try to go to as many games as possible. But I remember in 2 or 3 years ago, when the Rangers played the Devils in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that was kind of miserable for me too. And the reason was that it was a few things. I mean, for one, I really wanted them to win, and it was one of my first experiences in really having to sit in the press box in that situation too, which is obviously, I'm not complaining about this wonderful
of course.
Ability I have, but it's just a funny situation. You're sitting there and every instinct you have to fight against while also trying to do your job. And but anyway, that was a weird series because that iteration of the Rangers was kind of a miserable team. They're under Don Tortorella, and I love John Tortorella, but they were all unhappy, yeah. And it was not, they were on lockdown, and a lot of times Madison Square Garden to begin with, the teams, it can be a little tough to get through to people, and I just, it was sort of that wake up call that I guess a lot of sports journalists probably have had in their careers, where you're like, wow, the curtain's been revealed and yeah. pulled back, and this isn't quite as wonderful as I thought it would be. And then they lost to the Devils, and it was funny because a lot of the unbiased, you know, national sports writers, or even some of the New York area writers, I'm not going to out anyone, but we're almost relieved that the Rangers were out of it. So that was a weird situation. This year, I'm not sure yet whether I'll be covering the East or the West, or trying to go back and forth or something. But it has been, I've been watching a lot of games at home, and it's been kind of nice to be able to cheer in the privacy of my own home. No one can stop me here.
It's funny how as I get older, I was talking to Joe D'Alessio, who writes hockey for us and is a Rangers fan as well, and I was asking him where he was watching Game 7. He's like, home, obviously. Are you crazy? And I realize I'm the same way. Like as I get older, I enjoy, for actually important games, I actually don't want anyone around me. I would like to actually, it's probably best for me and for others, including my loved ones, that I be locked in a room with the door shut in a lot of ways. And I feel like it's hard for that. I'm curious, when it comes to this Rangers team, this is kind of unexpected to say the least. Never minding the 3-1 deficit. I don't think a lot of people even thought they would make it this far, regardless of that. Is there anything, what's special about this team? What are they doing? Or is it just Lundqvist kind of making up for other stuff?
I think they were a team that they started the season and they didn't get off to that great of a start. They had a new coach. They were learning kind of a whole new system, and Lundqvist was in the middle of a little bit of a contract, not dispute, but situation. Figuring that out.
Kerfuffle.
Exactly. What do they call it in Donnybrook or something in baseball? anyway, they didn't get off to a great start. That said, they are one of the teams that going into the playoffs were one of the fancy stat, advanced stat, whatever you want to call it. Whatever you call it, someone will get mad at you. But and I like this stuff. We're one of the teams, the dark horses teams to watch, because their record wasn't necessarily reflective of their, especially kind of in the second half of the season, of their play and their overall puck possession and those sorts of things. And then obviously Lundqvist, really right around during and after the Olympics and even before, kind of peaked at the right time. So, I think that's why we are where we're at. That said, when they were down 3-1, I genuinely, especially the way they were down 3-1, like that game was so awful, played so badly. It was painful to watch. Like, I wasn't enjoying any of it. I don't think people really thought they'd be able to come back. But that said, the way the playoffs are, if you can get that game six at home, and then all of a sudden everyone's on your side and the other team has all the pressure on them, especially when it's a team like Pittsburgh, where this became sort of a here we go again situation. And so the Rangers were in that great game seven position where they didn't have to, if they lost, it wasn't the end of the world. If Pittsburgh lost, all of a sudden it's like, let's blow up the team. So.
Yeah, Pittsburgh fans, they seem, they've got a little old school Red Sox to them. They do,
they
right?
They do, and I didn't realize it, because you think of Pittsburgh Penguins, you think they're the juggernaut.
They're awesome, right?
Yeah, and then you remember that they haven't won a cup in years, or haven't even really. I mean, yeah, I guess they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but it was kind of a disaster, and. Yeah, it's almost like the Patriots, but they didn't have the run the Patriots have to begin with. But it's almost like when you think about how the Patriots haven't actually won a Super Bowl in so long. But yeah, they do have that, because even when they were up 3-1, they had like a sense of doom, and I was surprised by that.
So now, when it comes to the Rangers, you and I are both people who used to live in New York and no longer live there. So, One of the things that's fun for me is, you know, I look at, I don't get a sense from people I talk to in New York that the Rangers are that big of a story in New York right now, and as well as they as maybe they should be. Is this team exciting? Are they built to kind of capture the imagination? Is this too much of a surprise? Like, how do Rangers fans feel specifically, not just about how good this team is, but just about this team?
Well, I think hockey fans are just sort of used to being,
well, yeah, right.
that sort of fan and that sort of sport. But but it's funny. Every year, the other night I was texting people, and I have people who I have annual texts with. You know, every year in May we text for a week, and then we don't text until next May. It's right. All the Rangers fans. Right. But you know, so there's that group, but. I was actually thinking about this myself. Not that they've flown under the radar, but it's sort of just been slowly building. I think when they were down 3-1, no one really expected them to beat Pittsburgh, and people are sort of slowly catching on now. I think Game 7, I'm sure, was watched by a lot of people, and I'm sure a lot of, you know, I can just imagine a lot of bars were showing it and everything. And I think now that they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's suddenly going to be, you know, and the Nets were still sort of in it, and I think now that they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's against Montreal. It's going to be the thing that's going on in New York, and so we'll get the bandwagon, which is always fun. Right. But it's also it's fun for Rangers fans when you can go to a bar and the game's on, and you don't have to ask five people's permission.
One of my favorite traditions with the Rangers too that I noticed when I was working at New York Magazine is right when they start doing really well, Dolan will show up.
Oh God!
Yeah. I love it when that happens, because of course he's pretty upfront about how he doesn't know much about hockey. Of course he's supposed to be upfront about how he didn't know much about basketball either, and that hasn't stopped him. But so it's because I feel like everyone just kind of forgets, because he has so little to do with the hockey team, that he is still the owner of that team. And then he'll I'm fully expecting him to pop up anytime in the next week and give them some sort of speech. Or something.
Yeah, I actually got chills down my body just thinking about it.
Because he did this. He did this last year or the year before, right? He showed up right in the midst of a win streak and said, "You guys have what it takes." And then they completely fell apart.
You remember it because I'm sure you're working with Joe D'Alessio, who was probably so scarred by it as was I. But as a fellow Knicks/Rangers fan, yeah, that was the season under Tortorella where the last time they got to the Eastern Conference Finals, he came, I think it was shortly after the Winter Classic, and they had just been on 24/7 and they won the Winter Classic and they were really riding high. And he just showed up during a John Tortorella press conference and and you have to remember he hadn't spoken to the Knicks media in a decade or whatever it was, you know, it was this famous cold shoulder. And then he just sort of ambles into the middle of a Rangers press conference and takes the mic and is delivering an extemporaneous speech about, and I think he actually says, "We're going to win the Stanley Cup," which hockey is such a superstitious sport, and give John Tortorella credit. And actually Dolan, I think, really liked Tortorella. I think he gave when he gave that interview, he said as much. But Tortorella took back the mic and basically said, "Get out of here. We don't want to hear that from you. Go away." Which everyone was happy about. The Torts was the only one that could really get away with that at the time. But yeah, you're right. It's only a matter of time before he shows up. You know, his band sings the national anthem or something.
That was a very generous verb to use to describe the Jim Dolan walk is ambling. That's a nice way to put it.
It's not a stride. It should be a stride, but it's not a stride.
Yeah, again, amble. There are other words that are less generous, but amble is the nice way to put it.
It's funny. I was talking to Henrik Lundqvist once, and I asked him who was most intimidating, or who he feared the most of people he's met between Martha Stewart, Mike Francesa, and Jim Dolan. And he kind of gave a very straight answer. He was "Well, Jim Dolan, because he's the only one that has like power, any power over me. And I realized that he, you know, he's to those guys, he's Mr. Dolan, and he is to be feared and respected. I think to Mr. Dolan, he thinks that we all think that too, but
yeah, that's, we don't.
No.
Also, Lundquist totally underestimating the power that Martha Stewart has over us all.
I know.
Yeah, I think that he'll rue that statement someday.
She's the only one that would leave me tongue-tied. I know. If she's listening to this, like, he's in trouble.
Yeah, and if she's listening to this, like, wow, what a
you've made it.
Yeah, what a multitasker. Like, that's really amazing that to pull all that together. She, you know, maybe she just follows you around. Which, in that case, remain nervous. So, who's gonna win this series? Do you like the Rangers or do you like Montreal?
I think I don't know. I mean, it's two really good goalies, and I think I think the Rangers have the capacity to win and the ability to win. I could see them winning. I could also the Montreal just kind of made a Boston team that a lot of people thought was the best team in the NHL like look bad almost. I mean, I know it went to seven games, but they really picked them apart. That said, the Rangers did the same thing to Pittsburgh, so I don't know. I'm not really sure. Like, I haven't like looked into the matchups yet or anything like that. No, I know, but I just
I don't mean to put on the spot.
I don't know. I hope it's a long series. Like, I hope it gets people into it and is like a fun long, like one of those fun long series and not kind of an awkward sweep. Or I hate when a conference final is kind of a dud. So hopefully it'll just be a fun.
See, I feel like that's a good sign for you to getting away from the fandom and more to national coverage. Because I wanted the World Series to be a 4-0 Cardinals sweep in which each game the Cardinals scored 11 runs in the first inning.
You didn't want to ride any roller coaster.
I don't want a roller coaster. Afterwards,
you wanted like the lazy river.
Exactly. Afterwards, I like the 11 World Series. I love now, but at the time it was miserable.
Yeah.
Like you know, now I'm like, oh yeah, that was. I always believed, but that's not the way people watch games. I'm sorry, I've turned this into a Cardinals thing again. Does it matter? Are the Blackhawks the best team?
It's funny because the Blackhawks almost people started to say, "Wow, are the Minnesota Wild going to win this series?" Yeah. And the Minnesota Wild were really the surprise of the playoffs, and it's really bodes well for them. And they had a lot of like really young, fast players that just played really young and fast and were awesome. And all of a sudden, the Chicago Blackhawks, who have Patrick Kane who's you know still a kid but seems like an old man, and but anyway, now that they're in the next series, I mean, I don't know whether they're going to play the Kings or the Ducks. That series is also going to seven. It's really been like a great second round with all these series going so long, but I think when the Blackhawks get rolling, their weakness is that nothing against their goalie, they don't have. And, you know, he obviously won a Stanley Cup with them, but their goaltending doesn't really, like, strike fear against an opponent. And I think they've shown that they can be exposed. But that said, they're just – you look at their roster and just the depth they have is kind of overwhelming. And people have been lately talking about, you know, who's better, Sidney Crosby or Jonathan Toews. And one of the arguments in Crosby's favor is just look at who – Taves' line mates are at any given time. He always has like another player of practically of, if not literally, like all-star caliber on a line with him. And that's just how good the Blackhawks are. So, I mean, they could easily win the cup again, but I think it'll, you know, if we're playing the Kings or even if they're playing the Ducks, you know, don't count out those California strong teams.
I feel like the Blackhawks have like, if they win this year, you can, I mean, can you start thinking of them as, like, a mini dynasty type of thing? It feels like that's, what, three and six years?
I mean, like, I think definitely, like, especially just the fact that, I mean, it's interesting because after they won the Cup, they actually had, like, a, I think one of those, you know, old-timey fax machine mishaps or, like, oops, I missed the, it was literally, like, I missed the deadline. Oops! Like now, these players are free agents. You know, I forget like the exact.
Right, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, they lost a bunch of kind of major players from that first team, and you know, even the goalie, you know, they have a different goalie now. They used to have Antti Niemi, who's now with the Sharks, but they do still have that sort of that same core. And you do have those two, you know, the Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, which is one of those great yin yang matchups in sports, I think, right now. And one stat about Chicago that I was looking at, and this was the other day, so it's obviously been updated by now. So I guess they're now, at the time they were like 11-2 in games where they could clinch, which I guess they must now be 12-2.
Right.
Don't quote me on that. She says on the podcast, but
this is all off the record, by the way.
Most other teams in the NHL going into these games, you hear these stats like, oh, they're 0-5. Like, I think the Rangers haven't won a series in less than seven games in like years and years and years. And Chicago is that team that you always talk about when the talking heads say that they have to be able to close this out and take a break and get some rest. That's what the Blackhawks do, and they're just a very efficient team, and they, you know, they're scary. Like, you just, at any given moment, you just sort of like, okay, which one of their like 17 All-Stars is going to score like their fifth game winner of the playoffs? Like, I don't even know how the math adds up anymore, but.
So now you were like me, you were in Sochi. I saw you in Sochi. You were very, it was a delight, to be honest. I know I've said the word delight, but you're a delightful person. Katie Baker, I don't care what everybody says. and I was so lucky that I got to sit next to you during the USA-Russia game. I felt, and one of the subplots of that whole Olympics, at least from a hockey standpoint, I think there was a point where someone from the IOC was sitting next to Bettman. And like a press conference, and they had like this this wacky, nudgy sort of, well, the most exciting thing to do in hockey is to win a Stanley Cup or a gold medal. And they had this like funny like little fight between like which a player would want to do more. I found that atmosphere at the USA-Russia game. You've been to a lot more hockey games than I have. But I found the atmosphere at that as intense as anything I've actually seen in sport. I thought it was absolutely crazy. You've been to a Stanley Cup final. Which is big? Which, in your experience, was more of a crazy crowd? A Stanley Cup final or that USA-Russia game?
I mean, honestly, like, it's too bad that one or the other of those teams, USA or Russia, had even made it to a medal.
Right.
Because in hindsight, you look at the game and you say, oh, well, it didn't even really matter, or you know, neither of those teams even meddled. But honestly, that was like just thinking about that game, I'm so nostalgic for the Olympics anyway. So, but that was truly one of the, you know, top live events I've ever had the privilege to be at, and it was just, I mean, you saw the Russian fans throughout the Olympics, and not just at hockey, but you could go to, you know, the biathlon, you go to, you know, slopestyle, or anywhere. The Russian, like, I would walk into an arena and look at the scoreboard and be like, oh, I hope a Russian is, like, winning right now, because it'll be so fun. They were such great fans. They were so excited. So, I mean, that atmosphere, first of all, of all the teams, I was actually, one thing that surprised me is I thought they were going to hate Canada a lot more than they did. You know, given all the summit series and the you know, all, you know, that used to be the big matchup, and no, it was USA. They do not like USA, so that atmosphere,
we suck. I mean, we do. I mean, we're bad people.
I know, we're bad. So that was cool. And then, I mean, to have that game and to have that shootout, it was kind of funny, because as it was going into the shootout, I remember all the usual hockey fans who hate shootouts, and I'm actually not really one of them, which is kind of a controversial thing to say, but were the usual, oh, it sucks that a game like this is about to be determined by a shootout, which I understand. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they did, you know, overtime in the Olympics all the time, but in a round robin, it's kind of tough to do that. But anyway, and then all of a sudden it turned into like the most epic shootout in all of history. and I think it helped that the Olympic format was that, because in the NHL, you can't keep playing the same player like that. So it was just this extra layer of, you know, obviously, as we've seen now, TJ Oshie's on like Enterprise car commercials. So, but I mean, Stanley Cups are amazing, obviously. But to be in that Olympic kind of European style fan atmosphere, USA Russia overtime, the way it went into like 1,000 rounds, you know, one stop, one goal, just like the back and forth of the stadium. I mean, that was like an all time event.
So it's funny because I had a good time. I had more fun in Sochi than I thought I was going to. I think that I was kind of enjoying going there. But also,
you loved figure skating.
What's that?
You loved the figure skating.
I loved the figure skating. That was so much fun. It was funny too because, you know, I was at this figure skating thing and I've seen so many schmucky white guys do the "this isn't like football at all" Collins from those, that I really felt like I had to like give it like the full accounting in every way I possibly could, and I really was blown away. Like, and I was so disappointed because you know, I went out there, and of course my I was gone for a month, so you know my wife had like friends come over. Like, you know, we have a 2-year-old, man. Like, it's like not an easy thing when half of the caregivers, or maybe like 36%, I guess, of the caregivers is gone for a month. So she famously, like, she had her mom come over. They were very excited to watch the figure skating. So I was so excited. I'm like, all right. I write so much stuff that most of my family does not care about. This is the thing. I'm so excited. So I gave this full solid piece. I really think it's the piece I'm most proud of that I wrote out there. And I said, I was like, hey, look, I wrote this piece. And they're like, wow, we didn't watch any of these people. We only saw like 4 skaters. And this is completely unnecessary. Because I wrote about every single skater. I was writing, once again, nobody, the experience you have when you're in Sochi is so different than the people watching at home, that I feel like you're writing about an entirely different event.
Oh, I have Bonnie Ford, who is amazing and is like a, you know, Olympic veteran of...
Yeah.
It's funny to hear them talk. They're like, well, back in Sarajevo.
Right.
But anyway, she said to me that the best piece of, you know, wisdom she'd heard was, If you want to watch the Olympics, don't cover it. Because you just have no concept of what's going on. I mean, it's like no matter where you go, you're missing out on other things, and sometimes you end up just going to the random event that becomes this amazing life-changing moment where you find some really cool story, and then sometimes you trek up to the mountains because you think you're going to see someone win, and you know, next thing you know, it's like, you know, they lost, they didn't even qualify, and then meanwhile you missed something else. So it was funny, I feel like. And also, you know, the one thing I missed out on the most, or that I wish I could have seen was, and you, I don't know if you feel the same way, but was the Johnny Ware, Tara Lipinski duo.
Oh, of course.
That, like, you know, a phenomenon that swept the country, and you know, now they're like calling the Oscars or whatever they're doing.
They were at Kentucky Derby last weekend.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm like, can ESPN like poach them for the World Cup or something? Like, I want in on this. I totally missed all that. So, you know, we got to see it live, but we missed their commentary. So.
Yeah, though we did miss Costas's eye. We had that going for us.
For that, I'm very grateful.
It's true. Not that the gifts don't do it justice. So, okay, two last things, and then we'll go away. Number one, quick question. I'm curious because I've still, like, the Olympics still seem to me like something that I just did, but also was years ago. Quick, that USA-Russia game. I just went to Instagram and looked at the photo that I put up from there. How many weeks ago was that? Quick answer.
16?
12. It was 12 weeks ago. So it is.
I mean,
it really kind of blows me away that I left. I took a picture right when I was leaving. And that was 11 weeks ago. Like, it still feels like it's just when you're, I'd never even been gone for that long to come.
How many milestones did your son achieve in the time?
Oh, I came back. Yeah. I came back and he was speaking Latin. It was unbelievable. When I left, he couldn't even walk.
He was breakdancing.
Oh, it was unbelievable. And well, it's funny because the thing about that trip was, you know, for the first week, I would talk to my wife, and she was like, the first week, she's like, oh, he misses you. He goes around saying, hey, daddy, where's daddy? I'm like, oh, that's so sad. And then the second week, he stopped doing that, and that was a lot sadder. Yeah. He's like, oh, I've forgotten there was ever a being else that lived in this house. So I was eager to come
home. Kids are amazingly resilient.
Yeah. On one hand, and adults, totally not. I'm still reeling from that conversation. Okay, so the last thing I want to ask you about is the vows column. If I may make this personal one last time, when you wrote that for Gawker, it broke my heart because you were off the week that I was in, my wife and I were in the Times Vow section, the same week as Jane Lynch. Jane Lynch was in there, and she, of course, got a full, being Jane Lynch, got a full thing. And but I love the column. I love your column. I've always loved your column. And it's funny because I tend to, like, I don't read the style section as a general rule because it just makes me upset. It just makes me like, it does. It's just, some
it's
people,
like reading the comment section. It's like the comment section of life.
Yeah, right. And except the worst kind of, like, these terrible people. I feel like the comment section of life might be nice. We'd see some cute animals.
Sure.
You know, there'd be nice people doing nice things. We would see volunteerism. Yeah. You know, I generally think the world's a better place than we portray it, and definitely the way comment sections portray it. But for crying, yeah, the vowel section, the Sunday style section, I mean, once I accepted, oh, people read this because they want to get upset, then I was like, okay, now I understand that a little bit. I'm not sure there. But the vow, I love the vows thing. And it's funny, my favorite vows trope, and it almost got broken last year, is the, what is the way that we can euphemize the fact that we cheated on our former spouses to be with the people that we are with right now. That is my favorite vows trope. Usually there's some sort of hint of, there was a rocky period, but their love emerged, or so on. But then there was that one last year. Do you remember this one? The one last year from, like, the TV reporter. It was like a TV reporter where basically they were like, yeah, our kids hate us.
Yeah.
Our kids hate us. Our families were best friends, and then we left both of our families to be together. And the structure of the vows column, they're all supposed to be like happy stories.
Yeah,
and you realize this is the destruction of two families to make these two selfish, awful people be together.
Yeah, if it's the same one I'm thinking of, I mean, it was every sort of suspicious spouse's worst nightmare, because it was, I mean, I think they met at, like, elementary school car pickup line or something, you know, and they had, like, pictures of the children in the article. And I remember there was a couple of writers, maybe from, I think maybe like Salon or something, that tracked down the ex-husband of the woman, and, you know, he had things to say. And that one was, and you know what was the really funny thing on that one, and the Times does this sometimes, and it's my favorite sort of, I mean, it's really embarrassing that I even notice these things, but I'm pretty sure they allowed comments on the article, which they don't always do.
Just to be dicks.
Yeah, just to step back and be like, we're not going to say anything, but you guys, you know, release the hounds. And so, you know, Mark Klein, MD, was, you know, weighing in on so and so, and it was, yeah, that was a real highlight of that. And then there's been a few throughout the years that really stand the test of time, and I think back to them and I go and I'm like, oh man, that was 2008. Why do I remember this wedding announcement from 2008? This is a sign of a problem. But luckily now, I mean, I used to, when I lived in New York, I used to go to a coffee shop with the paper and sit there and, like, circle things and underline, you know, as I was getting ready to write the column. And I would just think, what are people thinking about me right now? I'm sitting here by myself. I don't have a ring on my finger. I'm writing little asterisks next to names in the wedding section and drinking a glass of wine at 11 a.m. on a Sunday. So this must be quite the sight.
So now, and forgive me, I don't want to overstep my bounds, but you've got a wedding coming up yourself here pretty soon.
Yes, in October.
And did you, I'm curious, because we went through this. Did you apply, or did you, is it too, it's about the time that you start applying for that, if you're going
to
be in the Times.
Guys, I need to start thinking about it. So yes, I'm definitely going to apply, you know, as much of a like experiment as anything else, because I figure, you know, if I don't get in, I can just be like, oh, you know, politics and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
I can be really, like, narcissistic and megalomaniac about it. Like, well, obviously they read my column and they blacklisted me, and not just like, no, you just didn't make the cut.
Oh, you're totally getting in. If I'm getting in, if I got in, you're getting in. There's no way you're not getting in.
I have to be strategic, because I don't want, you know, I don't know if I can match wits with, like, a seasoned, like, Lois Smith Brady or something. Like, she might destroy me. So
it is funny how, because they're really like Like they fact my poor parents, like they're in like small town Illinois, and they get a call from a fact checker from the Times Vow section, and they're just like, why do you like, they're suspicious that this is like government people. Like, why are you asking me all these questions?
I've heard like stories about the fact checking from friends that they really call and they're like,
they dig in.
We need, like, you know, they're like haranguing an elementary school nurse, like we need the records that she worked in the office in 1970s. But it's funny because my one friend, they, you know, her husband is like a investment portfolio manager or something like that, and they tried to write that he was a stockbroker, and my friend emailed me and said, if they write that my husband is a stockbroker in the New York Times, heads will.
It's over. So, well, so here's my okay. So this is my final question. When you make it, and you will, when you make it, who is the Grantland writer that's going to write the Weathered Blitz about your thing? Because you can't do it. It's conflict of interest. So who would you volunteer to be the person to write that one?
In a perfect world, it would be Mark LaFonte.
Yes, it would. Oh, yes, it would. Oh, he has to do it. He has to do it.
I think about this all the time. Like, I'm really upset he's not a hockey fan because, like, imagine the Diary of Sidney Crosby or something.
Oh, man.
Like, I mean, there's only one Diary of Derek Jeter, but I just, you know, I wish we could force feed him into liking every exact thing that I like in the same way that I like it. So every LaSanti thing was straight to my brain.
Oh man, I'm so glad LaSanti mostly edits. I mean, you know, I worked with him at Yahoo, and I'm always really glad that LaSanti mostly edits because everything he writes is funnier than anything I've ever done. So I'm always like, oh, good. Oh no, edit. Good. Edit. Just edit. Just stick with that. That's good. That's good. I feel like that way about Crags too. Like
Oh.
I'm like, oh, I'm so glad you guys are just editing so I can briefly still hide in the shadows until you guys come and completely blow everything I do away.
Well, yeah, I mean, like most of the world's most powerful people, like it's best when they're just behind the shadows, you know, doling out their wisdom in small pieces, because like we can't handle that much beauty in the world, so.
Right. So we hide in plain sight. All right, Katie, thank you so much. This was as much fun as I was glad I suspected it would be. And hey, good luck. I'm sorry. Unofficial good luck to the Rangers. I will be rooting for the Rangers and for you. And if they do make the Stanley Cup Finals, I hope that Grantland will put together a Katie Bakes cam. So we can watch you twitch as they play the Blackhawks for the Stanley Cup.
Exactly. That, yeah, that'll be stirring television.
I think so. I think come on. I think it'd be great. It'd be like watching that old Stephen Marbury cam from back in the day. You're like
Yeah,
pouring stuff over your head. It'd be amazing.
there'd be the definite Amari moment with a broken hand.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Katie. This was really fun, and I'm sure I'll talk to you soon. And good luck with all the wedding stuff.
All right, thanks, Will.
Take care. Isn't Katie Baker the best? She's the best. That was really fun. You can follow Katie Baker on Twitter at Katie Bakes, KATIEBAKES, and of course see her work on Grantland. This has been the Willis Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. I do not know who Monday's guest it will be, but it will be someone wise. It will be someone wise. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend. I'm going to be watching the tennis championships here in Athens this weekend, which will be kind of fun. So go Illini. And probably seeing Godzilla. So that'll be fun too. Anyway, have a wonderful weekend. I will talk to you all on, what's that date? Monday. Take care.